I knew we had a shot at finishing today. Look, when we're in the middle of it, it doesn't matter where I stop necessarily, but when we get to the end, I'm like, I can't leave myself a tiny bit and then I have to do one more part. I don't have enough for that. So I got to squeeze it in somehow. All right, so this is the afterburn. Okay, this is the afterburn. This is where we open up the floor for comments, questions about what I just taught. Okay, you also can ask anything really that has to do with the teaching on the other 10 parts of this. So if it has to do with the idea of being good or understanding what is meant by all that. And so if you want to line up here, if you're in the congregation, I see the line's already forming nicely. And if you're online, you can start typing in, hoping and praying that you might actually get a shot. Because the line out here is pretty long. I'll try to actually go to you. I'll take like two here and two there if I can. We'll figure it out. So some of you here, maybe, I don't know. We'll just go as long as we can. Maisie, go ahead and start us.
I praise Abba for you giving us, for him giving us clarity through you for these verses that we never properly understood. And I'm so happy that you went to Yaakov because that was the first thing that popped into my mind when you started this teaching. If I need correction, please give it to me. But I feel like after you clarified that one verse in 2 Corinthians 5, is it fair to say that even in my trial, if I keep my mind focused on Abba and the things of above, that is the true meaning behind experiencing his strength, his peace, like a fuller understanding of that?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's. I don't ever want to say anything that makes anybody think that somehow, because it could be interpreted like if I keep focused on him in the trial, I don't want you to not focus at all on what you still need to do to get out of the trial. But do it in the context of looking for wisdom and guidance from above, okay? If you start to go one direction, listen for a small voice saying, nah, don't do that, do this, okay? But you still have to walk out of the trial. But you have to walk out of the trial vertically minded, not walk out of the trial whining, complaining, and panicking. In which case, you probably won't walk out of the trial very quickly. I mean, the trial still might end anyway because some things are just limited in terms of how long they play out. But still, I want you to be vertically minded, and that's where your strength will come from, correctly, okay? But always remembering that while you're doing that, you're trying to come up with your plan to get out of the trial, to escape and move forward out of the trial, okay?
Thank you for that, because while I was sitting there earlier, I don't know if you heard my prayer, but I was in a lot of pain, but as I was listening to you teach and staying vertically focused, my pain just started to dwindle. So I praise Abba for that.
Amen.
I praise him for you. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. Look, and you know what? And I certainly am not looking to pat myself on the back at all, but some of you guys have been listening long enough that you may be taking for granted that this just doesn't exist everywhere, okay? And so I appreciate when people come up. I don't get a big head because of it. I got enough people kicking my head in anyway, so it's not a problem, but just go find this somewhere else, okay? And I wish you could. I mean, I certainly wish it was everywhere, but it's not. And so I appreciate that you guys appreciate that, the ones who do, because it's not just that I have the information. I'm willing to say it out loud without fear of consequence, right? I mean, that's the difference that a lot of people, I've met a lot of people say, oh, I've always thought that, but I was like, but yeah, but why haven't you said it out loud? I mean, these are other teachers. They're afraid because they're in here and not there, okay? At least in that one area. They're in the flesh, worried about the response, or worried about that people might not buy their CDs and their books and their, see, we don't sell any of those things, so I don't have to worry about that, okay? Because I'm not here to people please. That's why those ministries are always in trouble, because they always have to worry about people pleasing. Even though they try hard not to, it's always there. Because some people look at you like, man, how do you get away with saying what you say? Because I don't have anybody I'm trying to please but one. Okay? And you're like, so any of you that don't like the way I talk, he picked me. Take it up with him. He knew this is the way I talk. Because some of you are like, I can't believe he says those things on the microphone. He can. He knew I would. He picked me. All right? Shira?
Thank you, Rabbi. I am so full of praise for your stand on people-pleasing And I just want you to know what a tremendous influence you have been on me to overcome people-pleasing. And that's one of the fabulous things about this past year of my life here under your leadership is I am getting so free of what other people think.
Well, good.
That's why I wear things like this visor. You see, but
well, hold on. But let me just say something though. You came here somewhat free, somewhat, because you came here having someone sending you an email attacking me, okay, because you were part of his email group, okay? The guy I said that didn't love my Are You Saved teaching because he was a Vineyard, you know, sort of guy. And so that's how you found out about me. And so rather than just listen to his attacks calling me a false prophet, you went and listened to the teaching and said, oh my goodness, this is great stuff. And then you contacted us and then you moved here, okay? So you were somewhat free of that already because you could have just bought into him saying whatever attacks he said about me, right?
But you don't know some of the other areas.
No, I'm just saying, but at least that one area, you were free
you.
A little bit.
Thank you for that. But yeah. I'll tell you, there are some other areas that I've really been in bondage and it feels so good to be free. And, you know, you're just sinking in. I don't come to see you a real lot, but you're just really sinking in. I'm taking it to heart.
Good.
One of the thoughts that I had about this teaching was just kind of combined with Rebetz and Julie's amazing teaching on her exposition, shall we say, on the tabernacle and how I'm just thinking like there's a house not made with hands inside of each of us. And all those pieces of the tabernacle, if we could take, you know, years and years to figure out the parable that's in there.
Sure.
It's just awesome. But your message today has really given me a whole new grip on combating my flesh. And that's the idea of, you know, dispelling the old Christian idea of what it is to be present with him and absent from the body. The mind, the awareness is so centered on his presence, on his, he's living in here. He's in my holy of holies. And one of the scriptures that came to me was from 1 Kings 17:1,
right,
where Elijah confronts the evil king Ahab. And he begins to warn him that there's going to be a drought. And he prefaces his prophecy by saying, as Yahweh Elohim of Israel lives, before whom I stand. And I've always kind of wondered, what's the depth of that? Wow, you know, I mean, right. Is he kind of, because he's a prophet, is he up in the heavenlies somewhere? And you just explained that to me today.
Well, good.
That to walk with that awareness that I am always standing and doing everything I do before the one who dwells in me. He's not way up there looking down.
Right.
He has to live with this.
Amen. And look, in Elijah had a flesh moment when he's in the cave and he's panicking a little bit like, I'm all by myself. Where's everybody? Okay, he disconnected a little bit in that moment. He was not present. And that's where Yahweh said, hold on a second. We got thousands of those guys out there, but you just don't know. But he did, all of these guys, Moses had his flesh moments. Everybody has their flesh moments where they lose that connection of staying totally vertically focused and they get distracted by what's happening around them, which is usually garbage and just, you know, nothing good's happening, right? And so we get distracted by what we see with the visible, okay? Because it all looks terrible. Or we can get worse, it all look really good when it's not. Go either way. But also, I didn't say it probably as clearly as I wanted to, but you brought it up a little bit with the absent the body thing. It's something that's happening right now every day. It's not something that when you die, you know what I'm saying? And you're out of the body, then you're whatever. It's now. Where your head's at, you're either in the body or you're present with the master. One of the two, right? Where's your head, okay? All right? Parents ask their kids all the time, where's your head? All right?
It's an awesome tool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Rabbi.
Okay, hold on a second. Catherine, we're going to try and get one or two from the live stream, and then we'll get you next.
Okay, from C4, if they say the law was done away with, the law is Torah, and Yeshua is the Word made flesh, are they saying the Messiah is done away with?
They in essence, they are, but they don't know that because they think that they're rejecting the one for the other. The Messiah they believe in replaces the Torah, okay? That's why everybody needs to listen, beware false prophets. That's the only way you can really understand the fullness of the agenda, okay? If you want to see how well bubble popped you are, go listen to that, all right? Which I say actually sort of tongue-in-cheek because somehow so many people, the first one they watch is that one that I find. I mean, how many of you that was the first one you saw? It was like half the room, okay? So, I mean, you know, I would have expected that to be the way it would go. I wonder how many people that's the first one they saw and then never came back. That was also the last one they saw. You know. All right, Rob, one more.
From Anna Kaufman. So Matthew 6:25, seeing how badly the system is perverting our food, at what point are we not to worry about it? Do we accept all that is going on with our food, even though it can be harmful to us?
All right, you're confusing two things, okay? You can still make every effort in whatever we're talking about. In this case, we're talking about food, but you don't worry. You have to know that Abba knows that we're being poisoned and whatever. Look, breathing, you're being poisoned. Your water's poisoned. Everything's poisoned. But you also know that your body is so amazing that somehow with all the poisoning increasing over the last, say, 50 to 100 years, we're also living longer. So apparently, we're made pretty resilient. So I'm not saying, that's why I said you're mixing things. I'm not saying don't worry, but then just take and accept everything. I'm saying don't worry, but make every effort that you're comfortable making. Okay? I make an effort to not eat GMO things. Okay? I make an effort to not eat certain, you know, things that I know have certain chemicals in them, whatever. I make some effort to filter my water. Now, if I drink something or eat something that I didn't get to check, I don't worry about it. I'm comfortable that I've made the effort that I'm willing to make at this point. Some people make much more of an effort than I do. Some people make a lot less effort than I do in this particular area, let's say. But what are you worrying about? Okay, it is what it is. And so I'm not saying have a callous disregard. Well, if it is what it is, what do I care? No. To whatever level you care, make that effort. All right? It's your thing, all right? And so that's your, like, you'll see me, I carry around a water bottle with me into restaurants because I'm not drinking their water because I just never liked the way it tasted even before I realized it was actually bad, okay? I just didn't like it. So, you know, and I'm not ashamed. I walk into a fancy restaurant, a steakhouse, and bring my water bottle and make my own drink in front of everybody. I don't care. But this is a fancy steakhouse. So what? I'm a paying customer. They'll let me do what I want, okay? But you do what you need to do. So again, when you say at what point are we not to worry about it, always, never worry about it. But accepting all that is going on, yes, accept that there's a limit to what you can actually do and have a comfort with that. But don't make no effort if you really think that it's something you should make an effort with. All right? Okay? But just make some effort. All right, Catherine?
In 2 Corinthians 5:6, when you said being at home in the body means comfortable in the flesh and not with him, and the actions and the thinkings are not spiritual and I'm not connected with him. Is that correct?
Yes.
So with that definition, when I look at verse 9, so we also make it our aim to well-pleasing to him, whether being at home or being away from home. So if definition being at home means I'm not connected with him and not spiritual, that means that's a state, right?
No, I think actually here, and I tried to explain it that way, maybe not good enough, which is why I love the afterburns, and I can clarify something. I think when he says at home or away from home, he's actually talking about location, meaning whether you're where you are in the congregation or not. Also, whether you're doing it in life now or you think you're going to be doing it when you are resurrected. So I think now he's talking about location. Because it can't be saying whether you're home, meaning in the body, or whether you're as far as the present or not. What he's saying is, if you're expecting to do all these things when the kingdom has actually come, you should be doing it now, because you have to be doing it in both cases. So it should be our aim to be well-pleasing to him, whether now, because everything's going to be well, want to be well-pleasing to him then. So it's more of a timing mechanism. Does that make more sense? Did that help you, Catherine? Okay? Because you're right. It can't be, well, you know, somehow if I'm in the flesh, then obviously I'm not present with him. So no, he's saying home or away, he's talking about here. I think he's saying, look, you guys want to be well-pleasing to him. It shouldn't just be, take it another way. Some of you want to behave a certain way when you're in a congregation, but you don't act the same way when you're not here. Anybody ever go to church or go to synagogue with people like that? They acted all whatever, and as soon as they got outside the door, it was a whole different person, right? So he's trying to say, look, no matter where you are, no matter where it is in time, you need to be thinking about what's pleasing to him and focused on that. All right, Shannon?
My question is regarding, because I remember you mentioning like how you not let people get to you is by protecting your feelings. And my question is like how do you do that? Because I think I'm doing what I can to protect my feelings when I know there's some things that still stir up emotions with me, but yet I still lose control, like what I'm doing is not working. So I guess I just wanted to see, ask, what does that look like, protect
all right.
my feelings?
Excuse me. All right. Somehow you have to, again, I do this much more instinctually at this point because I've been doing it my whole life. I can't remember how I developed it in the first place, okay? But what I can tell you is at some point I recognized that nothing's personal. Okay, and you have to get to that place where you understand that nothing's personal. If I walk over to you and spit on you, it's still not personal. It feels very personal, okay? But really, it's something in me, not in you necessarily, okay? And so when you start taking things personally is when the feelings all get hurt and stepped on and everything else. So if you could ever get to the place and realize nothing is personal, because go back to the developing the character of Yeshua teaching where I said, a selfless person cannot be offended. You know why? Because it takes a self to be offended. Okay? That's when you're in your flesh. Me, me, me. I can get offended. But if I can get away from that, then whatever you're doing is not being done to me. You're just doing it. Okay? So that I can't get my feelings hurt. All right? So even if you come over to me and slap me, I might not like it. My feelings don't have to get hurt because it's not the me that you're doing it to. Maybe you smack my body and that's fine. All right, so you slap me. All right, Yeshua says turn the other cheek. Okay? And so we have to have a lot of time practicing not thinking everything is about us. And I don't mean like from a selfish point of view, like it's all about me, but when somebody does something, you think it's still because I'm no good, because I'm this, you still make it about you. If you think that it's because your worth is not where it should be, if you think that your value is not where it should be, it's because you're taking it personally. Okay, so you're making it about you. Somebody did something to you, you say, well, that's because they think I'm not worth anything. Well, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but who cares what they think? Do you think you're not worth anything? Okay? So if somebody comes up to you and says, man, you're an idiot. And I can say, I agree with them or I don't agree with them. But if I'm not going to just, because they said it, have my feelings all hurt. If I know I'm not an idiot in whatever situation is going on, I'll just say, okay, I don't agree with you. Sorry you feel that way. But otherwise, I can get my feelings hurt and be like, how dare you call me an idiot? You know, what's the point in all that? So if the goal is to become selfless, then you have to recognize that nothing is personal, okay? Yeshua did not take it personally when they spit on him and scourged him and everything else. What did he say? Forgive them, Father. They don't know what they're doing. Now, that's not to say they didn't know what they were doing. They knew what they were doing from the point of view, like, they didn't spit on him like, oh, my gosh, they didn't realize they spit on you, okay? And whipped him with the chains and ripped flesh off. They knew what they were doing, but they didn't know what they were doing. In other words, they didn't understand how wrong that was and who he was and everything else. Same thing with the person who does something to you. Instead of getting your feelings hurt, say, Father, forgive them. They don't understand. They don't really know me. They don't understand what they're doing is wrong and hurt and trying to hurt me. But why allow them to do that? I don't mean not only why allow them to do whatever they did, but why allow it to hurt your feelings? It's bad enough they did what they did. Okay? Now, the point to you is it takes a lot of practice, okay? Because right now, and again, this is like when I bring up the point, like when my daughter asked me when I first had to do social media director, she would read some of the things people said, which weren't always that nice. And she said, when you see these things, doesn't that hurt your feelings? Doesn't it make you mad? And I said, no. She goes, why not? I said, because I don't care. Okay, I don't give a bleep. I don't care. You know, they're like, what, are you just callous and cold? No, I don't know where it's coming from. I know it's coming from wherever they're dealing with. It's not about me, okay? They're making it about me. Everybody you talk to has ever left here, if you hear them ripping, it's still not about me, okay? And so I don't get mad about all that stuff. I'm disappointed. Well, mostly I'm disappointed if I know you. If I don't know you, I don't even have enough to know you to be disappointed. Okay? Because maybe that's just who you are all the time, and it's to be expected. Because it's one thing to have somebody behave a certain way and you expect it. It's another thing for you to behave a certain way that you don't expect and you're disappointed. Okay? So somebody may surprise me and behave in a certain way. I'm like, man, I didn't see that coming. I'm disappointed in that person. I'm not going to get my feelings hurt by it, though. And so, you know, but it takes, I mean, I'm 60, you know, years old. It's different. I've been doing this a long time. Okay. Also, I have zero blue. It helps. Okay. All right. I mean, because the part of you that gets his feelings hurt is going to be your blue side or your white side. Okay. And the blue's going to get the feelings hurt and get mad. The white's going to start to believe whatever was said. Well, I must be no good and terrible. I mean, that's kind of what happens more white than blue. Okay. I have neither of those. That is an advantage in this particular case. Not an advantage in all cases, but in this case it is, all right? So I can't tell you necessarily that some of this is just because I don't have those things, so it's harder to hurt my feelings, okay? All right, go ahead.
Can I borrow some of your red?
No. Look, what you can do, all of you can do this, okay? And it doesn't say this necessarily in the book that the guy wrote about the colors and everything with the personality things. It's just my thing. Maybe he said it. I don't know. The motto of the red, okay? It is what it is. All right? And just practice. Keep reminding yourself. Anything that happens, just say it is what it is. Anything that you don't want to happen, okay? Anything undesirable, it is what it is. That takes the emotion out of it, okay? It is what it is. And if you're around me, you hear me say this all the time. Something goes on, like, well, it is what it is. Okay, who cares? All right, because it derails any progress, forward motion, or handling the problem when you get to your emotions all stirred up. Because now you're in your emotions, which, by the way, when people call here, sometimes if I'm talking about it with Elder and we're trying to discuss how we're going to help somebody, whatever, one of the first things that I say is, well, this person was in their emotions. Now, some of you are actually getting good enough to recognize, and you call us and say, I'm in my emotions. So you'll have to just handle some of this stuff knowing them, because then you recognize you're in your emotions. Okay, good. That's a good first start. Now we got to figure out how to get you out of that place, because you can't think rationally in that place. Okay? It's got to be it is what it is. All right? Anything else?
So when you just do the practice of it is what it is, does that also help? Because I know we are to protect our feelings, but also I have a habit of, like, being white, shoving down my feelings and not dealing with them, because I know that's not healthy either.
No. Okay, so let's add a second thing. And by the way, this is kind of what Yeshua said in Matthew 6, okay? He said, look, you don't have clothing or food or something. Well, it is what it is. So the second step is, now I can have the next important thought. What can I do now to make it better? See, your second thought when something happens is, what can I do to cry somewhere, or how do I get even if the blue side wants to get its pound of flesh or whatever? But you're not thinking about, what do I need to do to fix this? See, once you say it is what it is, then you can say, okay, it is what it is. All right, I just lost my job. Okay, so let's say you just lost your job. You could get all upset and depressed about it. You can go, what can I do now to get a new one? It is what it is. All right, whatever your situation, the second question has to be, what can I do right now to take a step in the direction of fixing this? Okay? Because then you're not focused on the feelings and beating yourself up and being depressed and being like, nobody loves me, I'm rejected again. No, you lost your job. All right, so go get another one. also ask the question, did I do anything to cause the losing of the job? Only from the point of view of, so I don't do it again. Not so like, see, I know it. Nobody, I did it again. I blew it. So what? Listen, you know, anybody's been employed more than once, you know how to get a job. You also know how to leave or lose a job. Okay? It's, you know, if you only had one job, maybe the first time you lose a job is a big deal. But wait a minute, you still went out and got that first one. Why can't you just go out and get another one? Okay? So if you got a job, then you know how to get a job. So you can apply this friendships, relationships, anything. Okay? It is what it is. All right? Okay? All right, Sarah Beth, and then we'll go back to the live stream.
Okay, so bear with me. This teaching was really, really, really blessing, like so many ahas, and I'm super excited. I feel like I've gotten, you know, like auditory is really hard for me. I'm a very visual kinesthetic person. It's like, I feel like I finally got my picture to be able to put these words that were so hard into words, and understand them. And forgive me if you went over any of this because I had to step out and help the kids for a second. So I'm very glad you speak, Sarah Beth, because I'm extremely excited and not going to probably say this right.
This is my version of speaking in tongues, is that I understand what you guys are trying to say, even though you're not able to say it right.
It's very much appreciated.
Yeah.
Okay, so when he's talking about, you know, your treasure, he's simply saying the things you care about. Okay, why did it have to be so complicated? And then so in the same...
But it's not just what you care about. I hate to use it the way that we, you know, talk about scoring points. You know, like if you're in a relationship, like, man, I'm going to do this, I know I'm going to score some points with my wife or my husband. I think sometimes we think if I do this and this, it's somehow scoring points in heaven, so to speak, or it's scoring points in the world. See, sometimes we're busy trying to please people in the world and score points and have them liking us and appreciate us and think we're wonderful when it's not really what he wants us doing. So he says, no, treasure up your stuff up here. Focus on the things that, quote unquote, it's not a point system. Please don't get all, everybody's going to get all stupid with this. But I'm making a picture, all right? My boss wants me to do something. It's not going to be Torah proper, but I'm going to impress him and please him, and it's going to score me some points. Or I could do what Yahweh says. The boss isn't going to be so happy, but I'm going to score some points that way. Does he understand the kind of where I'm going with this? Yeah. Okay? And that's, so it's, it, that's also what it's talking about. Okay?
So with that kind of concept, when you were explaining that, I kind of connected, and again, I'm excited, so I don't remember exactly where I jumped from, but connecting it to the same kind of thing we've talked about is like we cause our own suffering with all of the things we want. Right. So is that a good thing to connect there?
Yep.
Okay, can I have a quick second one?
Sure.
Okay. Again, I saw...
We'll call it daughter privilege. Okay.
Thank you. You can't serve, so I connected a bunch of things and it's like, I see it everywhere now. It's like, you can't serve the above and the below, same as you can't have two emotions at the same time. And you can't have the two masters, and you've talked about you can't multitask. So like, worry and fear are of the below, but trust and belief are of the above. So if I'm seeking to change, you know, my state or where I am, I'm a shift out of the below so that I can shift into the above. I can't have the two at the same time. So it's like trying to,
yes.
If you're in a fear state, you're like, oh, how do I trust? How do I trust? You have to shift out of that one to shift into the above, correct?
Yes. Which is why when people are doing things they shouldn't do and they say things like to justify, well, he knows my heart. No, he does. And that's the problem. He knows that your heart is to do the below and not the above at that moment. But you're trying to convince yourself that the above is okay with it. And that's not going to necessarily be the case. Okay, Rob?
Okay, that's from Marlene. It says,
we miss you.
It says, I used to think Revelation 12:11 was saying that we stood fast in our beliefs in Yeshua and we were martyred for it. But now it seems like it's saying we all have until we each die to submit our behaviors to the Father and our lives are witness of us doing the Torah. This is not for the future, for Armageddon or the millennium. This is for now. Is this correct thinking?
Okay, so Revelation, what was the verse?
12:11.
All right, and they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their witness, and they did not love their lives to death. Yeah, this is talking about now. It's also talking about people during the tribulation, okay? But this is all of us always, not, you know, I always say to people, how serious are you? Are you going to obey unto death? Yeshua obeyed unto death, okay? So what level of obedience you have? You know, I've got the teaching, do you trust him enough to obey him? Okay? So Marlene, well played, okay? That's correct. All right, next one.
Okay, from Lise. Says, Rabbi, the word body has a lot of connections. I learned that 2 Corinthians 5:6, our body is this flesh world. Again, the word body in Psalms 133, is that the structure of the congregation?
All right, hold on. 133. So you're talking about the first, I mean, I assumed you were talking about the first verse. So like how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell in unity? Because it doesn't mention the body there, unless you're talking about the dwelling together in unity. There's no verse. It says, let the precious oil of the head, okay, Aaron's beard and the whole thing, and it doesn't really have that in there. So I'm not really sure the connection, Lisa, that you're trying to make there. But, you know, for us to dwell in harmony and unity the way it's talking about in Psalm 133, verse 1, okay, which I believe it even says on the front of my podium here, okay, that's only possible when we're focused on the above, okay? All right. Next, we'll try and get one more since they were quick.
Okay. From Olivia Dearth, when Shaul is talking in Romans 10, these people would have known the full context of scripture he quotes and would know all the reference to following Yah's command / the covenant. Is this correct?
Okay. Read it to me one more time while I'm waiting for
okay.
it.
Okay. When Shaul is talking in Romans 10, these people would have known the full context of scriptures he quotes and would know all the references to following Yah's command / the covenant. Is this correct?
I don't know, but I would assume. Excuse me. Don't be concerned about the cough. Some of you people are going to be panicking. It's been sounding like that for months, and it will sound like that for a while till it finally goes away. That's just my normal dealing with allergies and stuff. All right, look, he's making references that I'm sure he made because he knew they would know. Otherwise, why make the references, okay? Because he didn't just say something similar. He literally quoted the verses. So I think it's reasonable to believe that he taught them these things so that they would know, or that when the letter got to them, there'd be somebody there to point out, by the way, this is Isaiah. By the way, this is in Deuteronomy, okay? All right. Janet.
Thank you so much for your teaching. I have like 10 pages of notes.
Okay, well, we're going to have time for that.
I have a scheduled appointment, so I'll come after for more. But okay. I really, oh my God, there's so much here. The be present. I was thinking about how in our relationships, to being present is so important, right? Yeah. For the quality of the relationship and how much we treasure the fleshly kind of relationship, like daughters or, you know, husbands, whatever, and how intentional we need to be to keep that vertical alignment, because we don't see Abba, but we,
right.
But he's talking to us all the time.
Well, I mean, look, think about how many people you hang out with or see people, especially younger people, and they're sitting together, but they're on their phones.
Yeah.
They're not present.
No.
But they're hanging out by themselves together. I mean, we've had this disconnect of not understanding what it means to be actually present with somebody. And you know what? That's almost too real for some people. It's scary. How do I actually sit there and give you my full attention? And you give me yours. I mean, that's pretty intense compared to I'm sitting with you and we're both hanging out, but we're both doing our own thing on our phones. You know, it's a very different thing. Because I've seen that's the way it is with teenagers now. You know, they can hang out together in the same room and there's no relationship happening. They're just all doing their own thing on their own phones, but we're hanging out. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love to listen to personal development, right? And one of the things that I heard from Jim Rohn is in this life, you don't get what you need, you get what you deserve, which is, you know, what you're saying, whatever a man sows, so shall he reap. And it almost feels like our experience here in the below is kind of an opportunity for us to really develop and practice the skills that we will need to make it there. Because if we put everything we have in our work or in our relationship, we're going to get back what we're putting in. Like, we will get our crown of life if we do everything we can with all our hearts to serve him and to follow Torah, you know? Like I see so much of our lives here being present, you know, the examining ourselves, you know, with our relationship and how we're doing. So it's just so exciting to see how Abba works, you know, with us on a day-to-day. The first verse that you read, Rabbi, which was from 2 Corinthians, for we all have to appear before the judgment seat of Messiah in order for each one to receive according to what we have done in the body.
Yeah.
Okay, the body. Like in another part of one of the verses you said, do good for everybody. Do good to all, mm-hmm. but especially those to the ones in the body, with the body meaning this body, right? Can you expand on the body? What is that? What is that?
No, I didn't say it that way, but I like it too. Do good to yourself, especially those, because a lot of you are mean to yourself like crazy. But it's talking about do good to those in, at least who are claiming to be in the covenanted body. Okay, those who are making the effort to walk in covenants. That's what that's talking about there, okay? And there was something else you said that I was going to bring up another point. I got to think of what it was now. I lost it from there. I don't remember. So it doesn't matter. We'll go here to Ashley.
I hope I come up here with my question that can be somewhat intelligible for you to understand.
I speak Ashley. It's okay.
We'll see on this one. Somewhere in the scriptures, and I wish I remembered where, and hopefully you'll remember it, it was saying that whether you think you can come to the kingdom or you can't, I'm paraphrasing, but something, whether you think or you think you don't can make it to the kingdom, then you're correct.
No, I said that. That's
you did say that? Okay.
It comes down to something that is attributed either to Edison or to Ford, the idea that whether you think you're right or whether you think you're wrong, you're right. It's what you believe. Okay. Well, in other words, whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're still right, is what the quote was. All right? Because if you don't believe you can do it, you can't. But if you believe you can, then you probably can. It's about belief. And so I attributed that to the same thing with the kingdom. If you don't think you can get in, you're not getting in. Because you're not going to do the things necessary to get in. Okay? If you understand what the metaphor there.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah. But my question is with that then is, and I know this goes back to last Torah study or Rosh Kodesh teaching, but I think I had this, I'm not going to make it there because I think I'm so afraid of screwing up something huge or something small that should have been something big, and then I won't make it there. So how do I have that disconnect from that thought to a possible future
thing? All right.
Thing?
Everybody pay attention. Look at the camera. Look at you guys. Look. You're going to mess things up from time to time. Make every effort not to. I got to say that before what I'm going to say next. It doesn't matter what you do wrong. He's going to watch and see what you do next. So I'm not saying, that's why I said make every effort not to do. I'm not saying it doesn't matter what you do, so just as long as you fix it later. No, try not to mess up. But don't be afraid about messing up. If you mess up, he's going to be sitting there going, all right, let's see what you do next. That's the important thing, is what you do in response to recognizing you did something you shouldn't do. Okay? So it's actually valuable more when you make mistakes than when you don't, because he wants to know what happens. How would you handle it if you went off and did something you shouldn't do? Are you going to repent? Are you going to own it? Are you going to fix it? Are you going to make commitments not to do it ever again? Okay? Is it going to beat you up inside and really feel terrible about, at least until you repent? Once you repent, you got to let all that go. But you're just going to like, who cares? I mean, he wants to see how you feel about what you just did. After the fact, not while you're doing it. While you're doing it, you're doing it because you wanted to, even though you knew it was wrong, whatever, but you had a weak moment. But the more important thing for you is to know he's always going to be he's really almost only concerned with what do you do next. Okay? So it doesn't matter. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to do this big thing. Well, maybe you will do a big thing. How do you handle it, though? We got a lot of examples of people in the book here that did some pretty big things that were bad. King David, you know. Okay? And yet, Abba wasn't so concerned about what he did. I'm not saying he wasn't, but not so. He was more concerned with how he handled it, okay? Because he owned it right out. Didn't defend himself, didn't try to spin it, didn't, you know what I'm saying? Okay? So that's for you, it should be the encouragement. It's always going to be about how you handle, so how quickly you respond. All right, you did something you shouldn't do, and you know you didn't. You shouldn't have done, and you realize after you did it, and then you're like, yeah, but I don't want to repent about it right this second. He wants to see how quickly you own it and decide you're going to own, fix it. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I think.
Did that help everybody? Okay.
Yeah. I think when the next part of our sessions, I would like to discuss about, like, because I know, I think I'm understanding where the disconnect is. Not disconnect, where the thought process is beginning from, because when I was younger, I was trying to do the right thing when the wrong thing was the right thing. And I think it was because I kept getting, for lack of better words, caught and then mutilated over and over and over again to where I'm afraid of doing one wrong thing and then it's done.
Okay, so you're mixing two things together, but yes. All right, so the first thing is for all of you, when you use a phrase like, when I was in the past, I did what I thought was right. Why did you think it was right? Because you were doing according to the standards of those that had influence on you. Okay? Whether that was really evil criminal things or just not proper scriptural things, whatever it was, it seemed right because the people around you had given you the standard of that is what is considered right. Okay, and then you want to do things that please them because they've now given you the standard. Then you get your bubble popped and you realize there's a new standard. That's actually the oldest standard that you need to maybe measure up to. So don't feel terrible about, you know, the fact that, well, I did all these things and I thought I was right. Well, no, just say I'm not going to do them anymore because I realized they were wrong. But don't beat yourself up for thinking they were right. What else are you supposed to think? I mean, you grew up in a place. Look, I remember listening to a missionary guy one time, and somebody gave me some CD to listen to years and years and years ago. This missionary guy who was goes back maybe 70, 80 years ago in like Papua New Guinea. And apparently this tribe that was there, okay, I don't know what it's like at the time, so please don't be offended if you're there. They basically culturally just stole things. Okay, like in other words, stealing was like breathing. So nobody thought it was a problem. If something was left out, somebody would just take it. And you look at them, and they look at you. Like literally, the guy was like a doctor, and he would put his laundry out on the line, so to speak, and then some his shirts would be missing, and one of these guys would walk in with his shirt on to have an appointment. And he'd say, that's my shirt. And the guy's like, yeah, I know. I mean, because to them, there was no sense that this was wrong. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because in their culture, that's just what they did. You left it out, then I could take it. So there's a retraining that's necessary. There's a retooling that's necessary, okay? Now, for you, the problem then is, with all of that, you had also to deal with this training that was happening that says, if you mess up, there's horrible, harsh consequences. And so how do you change that? That takes time. We'll talk about that when we counsel, okay? Because some of you, when you messed up, I mean, you got a beating, and you got some, I mean, it was just terrible. And so it's scary to make a mistake, okay? And I want you not to be so afraid of making a mistake in terms of immediate consequences, but I want you to be afraid to make a mistake because there's more things you got to repent of and fix, all right? Okay, all right. Grayson, you're going to probably be last, or I might have, I got like 2 minutes, so go ahead.
So I just needed to say thank you for what you said today in regards to in all things putting him first, because for a while that was something that I like struggled with conceptually, because like with when it comes to tithing, like that's simple. It's just first, second, and when in the third year, done, easy. But then when it came to my time, I was like, well, what does that look like putting him first in all things? And then so then I was like, well, if I work 10 to 14 hours a day, how am I supposed to put any amount of time to like Matt, like, because if I want to put him first, and then in my head I was like, okay, well, then I need to put more time towards him than I do towards these other things. Then it's like, okay, well, that's impossible. And then that whole idea was basically shattered today, and now it's been replaced with, okay, before I take any lower action to make sure that I'm like under and like present with my Father, and that's something I can do, and that's something that I can do now instead of feeling I was in this place of like it's impossible for me to do it. And so I just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome. Look, it's not about the amount of time. He expects you to work for 6 days and only give him one. It's not about the, but it's about the awareness, right? So while you're doing your job, there will always be moments that pop up where you can make a choice to do A or B. And if your awareness is in the flesh, you might do B when you should have done A. If your awareness is in the above, you might do A instead of B. So it's having that awareness there no matter what you're doing, okay? Whether it's leisure, whether it's work, whatever it is, that should always have that connection to double check your thoughts and your actions, right? Am I representing him well? Okay? Look, you have a video gaming career, all right? But you can still represent him well when you're playing and with the interaction you have with the other players, and right? I mean, I'm amazed that people can make money doing this, and you can, and that's great. I mean, I couldn't have imagined that when I was your age because it didn't exist, okay? But still, you know how other people do their videos and other people do their podcasts and other people do their whatever, and you can make sure that you're doing it in a way that represents him well, okay? In terms of your character, in terms of the, you know, whatever it is that you're putting forth. So even though you may be doing that for 7 or 8 hours or whatever it is, you know, of work, or 10 or 14 if you include whatever else you're doing, but is it manifesting that you're manifesting his character through all of that? Okay? Is there any Torah issues that come up that you can make sure you're handling correctly? Are you treating people correctly so that you're representing him well? All those things are something. So it's not about the amount of time, but it's the quality of how you're using your time, okay? And having him involved as at least as a level of awareness. I mean, maybe the things you're doing really don't generally bring up an issue with him very often, but when it does, if you're not aware, you might miss that moment and go off in the flesh because you didn't maintain that awareness, okay? That's all. It's just having that little level of awareness, hey, my father's watching me. I'm going to do my job, my father's watching me. I'm sitting at a computer, I'm playing a video game, I'm working with plumbing, I'm doing something with medical, I'm amazing, I'm a housewife, raising kids, right? Whatever it is, are you aware that Abba's watching you and you should be knowing that he's either being pleased or not, okay? So appreciate that. All right, did you have anything quick or last online, Rob? Other than the frustrated people that don't get to ask the questions right now?
There's only a couple more, and I think it would take too long for you to answer them.
All right, bring them to the zone meetings. Okay, you're always welcome to bring any questions that we didn't cover on a teaching or didn't cover on a Torah portion. Bring it to the zone meetings, okay? Because then you got 2 hours just for the people who live in your zone. And so far, we've not had a problem getting everybody's questions in. We usually finish the zone meeting with no more questions to go. So that's been working out pretty well. Maybe at some point, if Abba grows this to a size where that doesn't work out, we'll see. But right now, we've not reached capacity where we didn't have enough time to answer everybody's questions. All right, that being said, appreciate y'all. Hope everything was good.